everyone. Okay, so excuse the like profanity in the title of this poem, because it's kind of like to urge, and it's like an urgency to wake someone up that I know. But it's called Wake the Fuck Up. Okay. Alright, so here it goes. Nothing grows between the LRO. Nothing breathes between the VRE. The word falls out of your mouth, laying there, lifeless as a limp balloon. In time, it will fizzle away like spittle, lost in the intricacy of the tablecloth. You never said it again. Love vanished from your vocabulary, like the ionic bonds of the letters themselves repelled. You always had a science mind. No time for magic, you say. Don't lie, don't lie. I can hear the oceans of your soul roar, despite all of that poker face decorum. Don't you lie, don't you try to disguise the swells, the oceanic cries. You hurt, you want to love, but tidal illusions threaten your feeble cries for love. Just let me say that in the aftermath of pain and the roar of stormy cry, seashells still speckle the shore, bright as pearls at midnight. I apologize. All I have to offer, all anyone has to offer is time. Do you know where I came from? Where you came from? Where it all started? We were eyeless in a mermaid's purse, nestled in the underworld in ocean caves. The left foot lays against a beating heart, while the right foot blindly kicks in the dark. Luna, the moon, emerged, then died 9 times. Shedding silent tears and ripping up the tides. She carried us, she gave us life, bore us through by the axis of her darkness might, deplored onto the silver shore of childhood. It was in the fissure of a moment when smack and air clouded its way into our lungs, nestled in the breasts of sacred mothers, never knew of this world, never knew of each other. Somehow, our rivers have changed course. I see you've built a dam on yours. I can hear your ocean roars. Think of Luna dying 9 times. Think of somehow... Sorry. Think of the destiny that she designed for you. Live up to it. Live for this moment. Enormous operation was our creation. You always had a science mind, so you would definitely know. Neither oceans or time can be confined.
That was fantastic. Thank you very much. Next up, we have the wonderful Mary O'Connell.
I love gathering cliches, and I thought I threw a few cliches together, but then I realized I had to have some kind of skeleton to hang them on. And I thought the brouhaha about the bank inquiry might be good. An Oireachtas non-partisan inquiry. Can such a thing exist? Now that we find that Ender left the cat out of the bag and got himself into a double bind. To establish who caused Ireland to go bust, he spelt it out in no uncertain terms. He needed to have people he could trust to get the terms of reference he preferred. Things went pear-shaped when Ivana Bacik failed to get her ducks lined in a row, let Mark McSherry slip under the wire, a stroke that Fianna Fáil were proud to show. When Ender found his plans had gone awry, he tried to add 2 cronies to the list. Steve Donnelly had not signed up for that, and so the saga took another twist. Donnelly always punched above his weight, refused to treat constituents like fools. He felt he had no option but to quit, confronted with how Ender bent the rules. To lure him back, an olive branch was proffered. Not one committee member will be whipped. The independent deputy from Wicklow refused to bow and risk his rings being clipped. Ender's credibility has nosedived. Eamon Lawler saw the writing on the wall. But the scary thing, when next we come to vote, is being left with just Sinn Féin or Fianna Fáil.
Having a bad day. So when you're trapped and there's no way out, you don't scream and you don't shout. You walk quietly, you walk slow from the moment that you know. Others seem to be rushing past, things to do that do not last, but yours is for eternity, so you can pause and let things be. This is no mountain to simply climb. This will not get easier with time. Stop wishing it was different. It's not. It's your life and it's all you've got. And you can sense a cliff edge by night or day, and you know well to keep well away. So you plot out yet another route, filled with hope, filled with doubt.
So I have to read something that I want to get off my chest. I couldn't write there for a while, so I'll just stick this out. Word music. It is ended, this word music. It is well run dry. The horn of plenty, depleted. Once here, an enthusiastic mascor, this is true, I swear to God, dragged a golden wine chalice from the server's hand and drained it with gusto down in one knee, down in one simitum inflected knee, outraging and upstaging the meeker, tittering sheep. So too is this word font, equally run dry and appalling. Why still this flow, with reproachful looks of irrelevance, would it be queer postmodern darling, vaccinated against Victorian words, thus verdant mellifluous, provocative rocks, baby. Happiness is passé, mon frère. Deconstruct and self-destruct the schmaltz. A long cold drink in an arctic blue lagoon, or some Baltic balsam, strange exotic springs to cool mind, refreshing inkwell, sifting sediments, seeking blue period, beneath, below, crystallizing once more, and hearing word music's song and core. I didn't realize I'd be going to a wedding in Poland, and I do feel a lot better after the Baltic. There's one other small little one here called Lydia, and it's the daft stuff I'd be thinking about inside of the hairdressers. I think I have it there. I swear to God, I just said he's so classically minded, that man there put me aside to get away with this tonight, because it's a bit daft. But this is what I was thinking inside Peter Marks. So it's called a very, very biblical sense, and Peter marked Lydia. And you know, I was a very holy person, but I'm sure. A Greek lady sold cloths of purple, a singular vessel of devotion, first convert to Christianity. An isle of the Greek archipelago bears this merchant's name, Millennium passed on. Amid a lavage of lustrous locks, a Peter Marks girl piped up her ancient name amongst the untamed manes of burgundy and gold. Most thought her named for a nostalgic lyric of Andrew Gold. Mum's nomenclature claimed a Gaelic wife of a French actor, Thespian Aaron Moreau. True Providence lay in the Isle of Lydia, golden-tressed ingenue of poise and dignity amid the sinks, drinking colour from pates, palates mixing, emulsifying, in a deeper shade of hipster purple. I'm a latent artist too, whispered this Lydia to me, and echoed the ancient, May her muse compay me homage in Phrygian seas. Perhaps then my Alpha, her Omega will see. So it is death, but anyway.
Fallacy in reverse. I mean, you know, normally if a pathetic fallacy, like it's raining, you're sad, if you're in sunshine, you're happy. But the reverse thing is happens in archaeology, when it's raining, it's a time of jubilation because it get, you mean you sit around the cabin and do nothing. Up until then, the weather in Balabasar had been rather tactful. If it rained, it would rain 5:30 p.m. and seas around 7 a.m. just in time for breakfast. Today, however, was different. John was the first to get up, and in doing so, opened the skylight window wide. Hey, there's a surprise for you. Paul squirmed in his bed. What is it now? Surprise, surprise, it's raining. Wow, and it's proper rain. Gosh, I hate homosexuals a bit more often. Well, that means it, Ian. Actually, no, if you don't turn up, we won't get paid, and it's St. Swithin's Day, even better. St. what? St. Swithin. So what I said, it's raising St. Swithin's Day, there'll be rain for the next 40 days. We're during the Saxon studies. Right, so you're hoping to get rained out for the whole month and not doing anything. Precisely. Know any good rain dances just in case? Paul sluggishly crawled out of bed. Well, what if it clears up later? What if today's hot again? Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to travel my carbon emissions, use heavy lead with petrol, and use everything that exists at CFCs just to piss that bastard nature off. Well, come on, we don't want this to grow up. As far as weather was concerned, in Balabasar, it turned out to be pathetic fallacy in reverse. Normally when it is raining, there's jubilation. In the cabin, there are people reading magazines, talking card game, playing card games and talking shite. Well, at least it beats shoveling shite, scooped Sam. Kate was in the far corner of the cabin, obviously enjoying a very loud game of Snap with Alison. Snap, snap, snap. Dad produced a hand shovel, made it more interesting. Anna dared look outside the door, the only person a staff to do so. I like that sight. Of rain, said Sheila. Oh yes, God, it is heavy rain. It's practically raining men, cats and dogs. You mean raining men, knowing you it would be, ha ha ha. Isn't that a bit dangerous and unpractical? Plop, 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 plop. I mean, those hit the ground dry on impact. What would happen if it hit you? An umbrella wouldn't help you either if you asked me to stick with hailstones. Don't put your boots so close to the heater, then. His willy's invented. Ha ha. God, his face is like a melted willy. Jack, Kate's boyfriend, jumped up suddenly. Jack and Kate in Wales, and according to what whichever account you believe, was conceived around the time of the Woodstock festivals. For a woman who's not sure about the veracity of his parentage, there's probably such reason that his mother smoked dope right through his pregnancy, for he couldn't get up with himself. It was rumoured as well that he was barred from every archaeology society in the country, particularly for that reason. He was, beyond doubt, a gifted guitarist, but his dog betrayed his lunacy, which for those in this pure entertainment level was not a bad trait to have. What? What was that? Was that lightning? Lightning! Did you hear lightning? A cat didn't miss container in this weather, or it strikes us. But enough time for us enough to get struck. The cabin is insulated, said Dan. Anyway, lightning travels from the ground up, and you turn around with generate enough energy for us to strike it, us to shut us it down. Yeah, we could hook you up to the generator and see if it works. Save electricity bill, said Paul. Actually, said Jack, I did get struck by lightning once. Seriously. You what? When I was cutting down branches of the biggest tree in my parents' backyard when it happened. He opened his shirt and showed it to the Getty Junction stairs. I got cooked and I got by. John looked at the scenario in shock. A boy is right. 4 degree burns over 7% of my body. Come on, Jack. It's possible to have 4 degree burns that I sense may still be alive. I'm a trained firefighter, I know. 4 degree burns, you said? By the time it felt like 4 degree burns.
Thanks. Thank you, Sheila. I guess we do have to keep it really short because we're very tight in time. Next up we have Ciarán McCartan, who's back into the board.
Thanks a lot. This is called The Horizon. There's a 5 a.m. every morning, beautiful by your absence. You sleep beneath the dawning sky, unburdened by your presence. The sun rose and lit the dark, untainted by impression. Free of judgments cold and stark, there were no itching questions. Just wonder waking while you dreamt, alive in imagination. Where time and thought is time well spent, and closed eyes breed creation. From the quiet of your room, see the mist on the horizon. The moment's life we could consume, or we could know our station, and share in the beauty of the world in bloom, and have appreciation that it exists free of us. We are just interpretation. As we shine it, watch it rust. We defined it, we said we must. But who do we serve in our lust for clutching comprehension? As we alter all existence with the weight of our intention. Graded as knowledge, feel a vague elation. Traded as power, used for domination. Live by the rules of collective contemplation. The sun rose in the sky this morning, did I fail to mention?
He opened the door and let out the dog. He hadn't slept much. A single star hung in the early morning sky. Shouts, coughs, a radio. The dull incantations of the sea area forecast rose from the pierhead. He stood in his sock feet on the dry concrete pavement and listened. He waited long enough to see the white light on Hope's Rock come round again before going back in and closing out the door. His women were not yet up. He filled the mocha pot with water and coffee grounds, lit the cooker and placed it on the small ring. When she hissed and spat, he made two milk coffees. He'd bring one up to Noreen. She always liked that, and he enjoyed watching her sip it, sitting up in bed, her two hands wrapped around the mug, feeling its warmth and savouring the taste, sipping slowly. He liked to see her face as she relished the smooth taste he had mastered. Not too bitter, not too sweet. It was something he had started after the first trip to Barcelona. He had become absorbed with time, temperature, density, grind, acidity. As he finished the last of the milk preparing Dee Dee's cereal, she called to him. From the bottom of the stairs, he looked up to find her standing on the edge of the top step, with the grey school pinafore over her head, one arm thrust up in the air, and her black hair caught in the zip. Rushing up the stairs, he scooped her up and didn't stop until she was standing on the kitchen table. She didn't cry, and when he'd untangled the hair, he squeezed her to him tightly. She could have fallen and broken her neck. What excuse would he have had for that? Making the coffee, the way he liked it, smooth, with plenty of milk. He was just about to go and dress the child, just about. It would have been his fault. It was always just about, with Noel Brody, just about. The dog started to whimper outside, and he shouted through the door at her. Noel Brody strapped Dee Dee into the jeep and double-checked the belt. He kissed the child on the forehead, letting his lips linger there. "My chicken," he whispered, and rubbed her cheek with his knuckle before easing the door closed. The milk. He mustn't forget the milk. Noreen might sit and have a cup with him after he dropped Dee Dee at school. He was in no rush. Joe Tynan's pillars wouldn't take long to plaster. He would put Joe off again if Noreen would sit and have a cup of coffee with him. He'd make her a latte. One set of pillars wouldn't make him up, but it was a start. It would keep him off the streets, as they say. A pair of fucking pillars. It was back to that. Joe had waited for him, had faith in him, though he'd fobbed him off endlessly during the good times. He drove out of the drive and turned right onto the lane for the main road. A haze hung over the tops of the blackthorns that glowed strong, still white with flower. Glancing left, he looked out over the tops of trees to the sea, as the road fell away on its steep drop down to the harbour and its stone-built pier. He recalled jumping from the pier in late summer evenings, feeling the cool breeze around his body and the wind pulling at his face, the vibration through the handlebars as he freewheeled down the hill and stopped just short of the end of the pier before diving into the freezing cold sea, plummeting into its sudden quietness, letting himself sink and linger beside the great black hulk of pier below the waterline, following with his fingers where the sea had eroded the mortar from between each square block of limestone, each stone appearing detached, disconnected from the one beside it, the one below it, the one above it. Afterwards he would hang around talking to the fishermen, dreaming of being a fisherman, and then push the bike the whole way back up the hill and do it all again. He remembered doing it years later, one hot July afternoon, to impress Norrie. And the time Paddy Fox never stopped and went right off the inn for a dare and never got his bike back. He wanted that life for Dee Dee, the pier, the fishermen, the sea, the seals that sometimes followed the boats into harbour. He built their house to overlook the pier. From his living room he could see the set of steps sin below the waterline, and the slip would disappear, and could count all but one of the stout mushroom-shaped iron moorings that lined its edges. In the early mornings he had pushed her in the pram down to that pier to let Norrie sleep. After a busy day, that's where he'd be found, returning from one of their trips abroad, no matter what time of the day or night. It was he'd take a walk down to the pier, then he felt he was home, but somehow it was failing him now. When he needed it, he moved in the seat, an image of Dee Dee, her little fingers caught in the Vaux mortar joints below the waterline intruded, her little fingers stuck between the stones, and her struggling to catch her breath turning blue. He shook himself free of the thought. Okay, I think that.
This is the kind of thought that I'd be thinking when I'm sitting in the hairdressers.
Wax on, wax
off. You didn't have to say that.
It just popped out.
The muse had left, but the poets missed her leaving. On the path of gold are high heels impaled dog turds of every shade of brown, their soft hearts still liquid in their shit. The dogs coughed from the lampposts they were chained to. She hailed a taxi black as a coach horse beetle, and it sent her a cold curve of puddle. Drenched, she took a lone seat in the back, nailed to it by her freezing arse. The driver took her to the edge of town. Now barefoot, she turned her back on the last golden street, and her feet in the wet grass shone silver. Behind her, the city hummed in its noise, the workings of its innards never still. But here she was beyond the city's will, free at last of its never-ending lies. In the dark, frogs began their fart-mouthed hymns. This was a language untainted by thought. She listened, blissful, while the white moon wrought its equalizing light upon her limbs. Bright under moonlight, the river meadow mimed a pure song of both light and shadow.